Any questions, concerns before we dive in? Okay. If not, last time we began talking about this loosely defined class of converters that I'm referring to as AC link topologies, where we have kind of separate inverter, passive network, rectifier. Like I mentioned, this is a very loose definition, depending on how far you want to stretch it. Really, every converter can be seen as this general structure. If I go down to a buck, they kind of overlap, but generally a power converter has something like this. I'm referring more to things where things are, each of these stages are individually identifiable. Okay. So a lot of these will look like full bridge, passive network, full bridge, but analysis is really independent. It doesn't matter whether I've got full bridge, half bridge, center tap, the behaviors are going to be similar. Okay. So the first, perhaps from the tank perspective, most simple of these to look at is the dual active bridge converter, where I may have an integrated transformer to help me with step up or step down of the voltage. But from the energy storage, from the reactive perspective, all I have in the tank is a single inductor. I could make this a one-to-one transformer or eliminate it entirely and it'd still be a dual active bridge, a single inductor in between. So this thing has some favorable characteristics, particularly when we set the transformer turns ratio equal to the voltage conversion ratio. And that allowed us to, with sufficiently small inductance, approach kind of minimum voltage and current stresses on our devices. And we do have 8 devices all stressed to that minimum, but peak currents on the primary side approach the average input current. Peak currents on the secondary side approach the average output current. You should be able to get fairly low loss, fairly good behavior out of this. These waveforms considered ideal switching devices that we have no capacitance, zero dead time. We get these fully linear waveforms for the inductor current throughout the converter. Then we started to look into what happens when I consider, for example, the output capacitance of all of these devices. Then we will have to insert a dead time. So the waveforms I've drawn here with inductor current at sufficient amplitude, we'll be able to zero voltage switch all 8 devices. And we're gonna go through that today, look at first what our equivalent circuits are in each of the switching subintervals, sketch the state plane, solve it, and look at the behaviors of this converter. So here again, we're looking at inductor current, the primary side bridge voltage, and then the secondary side bridge voltage, which are respectively these VP and VS, and then IL, the inductor current, in this case on the primary side. Again, as is common with these AC link topologies, I'm going to have half cycle symmetry, so I can just look at the first half period to analyze this converter, which would be subintervals 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then subintervals 5 through 8 are symmetric from in the middle with AC waveforms, they're anti-symmetric. Anything DC, input current, output current, they're the exact same thing, right? If I take this section of this waveform and flip it upside down, that's what I get for subintervals 5 through 8. So if I analyze what's going on in these 4, effectively I know what's happening in the whole converter. Okay. So with these 4 transformer inductors that I've drawn here, I'm going to sketch the equivalent circuit in each of these 4 subintervals. Those 1, 2, 3, and 4. And use those to guide my state plane analysis. Okay. So subinterval 1 is where I am effectively my dead time on the primary side, where I'm commutating the primary side full bridge, shut off all 4 devices, allow the inductor current to resonate with the output capacitance of those devices, and So I've designed it well, and I'm at a good operating point. I'll resonate all the way up and achieve zero voltage switching, at which point I'll turn on. In this case, devices Q1 and Q4 to clamp the output voltage high. So during that time, secondary bridge stays on, clamping the output the VS, the secondary side voltage, to minus V out. My equivalent circuit during this is going to look like V out clamped by the secondary bridge, and then on the primary bridge, all four devices are off. So if I consider the effect of output capacitance of all four of these devices, say they all have capacitance CDS, go to sketch my equivalent circuit with all four devices off, what am I going to see? If I kind of look into this node, I see a CDS going up and a CDS going down, both between this node and some small signal ground. So I'll see effectively both of those in parallel at this node, or two CDS here. Same thing at this node. As I look in, I see one going to ground, one going to VG. Both are DC nodes. So I'll see two CDS here, two CDS here. So effectively give me something that looks like the inductor perspective. The transformer, it's not going to draw the rest of this, 2 CDS, 2 CDS. I've already said in this interval on the secondary side, I have minus V out on the other side of the transformer, but that's going to give me a single loop, both of these effectively in series, 2 CDS, in series with 2 CDS is going to give me back CDS. Okay. So what I'm going to see is effectively just a single capacitor value. CDS. And to make a distinction, I'm going to call this actually CP, which would be the effective capacitance of the four devices on the primary in this series parallel combination. CP is equal to CDS in parallel with CDS, series with CDS in parallel with CDS, CDS of device one, and how did I label them? One and two, and then CDS three and four. Now, so I assume all these capacitances are linear. I can just do that as normal. I'll pause here and make a comment. I'm considering the nonlinear capacitance of these devices. This becomes a little bit more nuanced in that when I look at paralleling these two capacitors, they have a different voltage across them at any given moment. From an AC perspective, I can say the variations in that voltage should be the same, but the start of the interval, if this node's zero, I have zero volts here and VG volts here. This one goes from VG down to zero. This one goes from zero up to VG. And at any given moment, if I consider the nonlinear voltage-dependent capacitance, these two capacitances have different value. And around zero volts, this one will be big, this one will be small, decaying capacitance. So if I'm considering that full effect, better do series parallel, get my effective capacitance, then do an equivalent. This is really what I'm talking about, is the same thing I mentioned before on how you select what your AC equivalent circuit is. In doing so, you've destroyed the DC bias information. So if I just consider one equivalent capacitance, I have neglected what the DC bias is on each of these. I'm only talking about the voltage between here and here with CP. I draw this equivalent. So if I have something like some loss of ZVS and some hard switching, just using one capacitor here might not, depending on how I've created it, give me the correct answer for the amount of energy I've lost, because it doesn't have the correct DC information. It's just modeling this voltage, not the voltage on the individual cap. So the moment, we'll assume we've done that correctly, created an equivalent which is relevant to the analysis that we're doing, and we can just use a single value for CP. So with that, this will be our equivalent circuit in subinterval one, which is our primary switching interval. We are going through the ZVS transition of primary devices. For that, we'll go into subinterval two, which is where I will ramp the inductor current from some negative value minus I1 to some positive value I2. This is what I'll call the phase shift interval. The duration of this is that inserted phase shift, how much later we switch the secondary relative to the primary, which last time we discussed, I'm inserting that specifically to be able to ramp the inductor current, accommodate some sort of series inductance here. Okay. During that interval, my primary has now resonated up to the input voltage, switch on devices and clamp it there. My secondary remains clamped at minus V out. This will be a non-resonant interval where I just have VG on the primary and keep this minus V out on the secondary. And then at some point at the end of that interval, my control will shut off the secondary side devices, and I'll move into my secondary switching. I'm going to have no change over on the primary. It's going to remain clamped, same devices on, clamping the input to VG. And I'm going to shut off all four secondary side devices, allow them to resonate up to obtain zero voltage switching on the secondary, resonating with the inductor current. The same arguments we had in subinterval one, what I'm going to see is a single equivalent capacitance, we'll call CS. I've provided a set of waveforms. I haven't given any specs on what this converter is. Implicitly, we can assume that this is a high step down converter. The input voltage is large, the output voltage is small. The reason I say that is I've got this real slow, nice resonant transition on the primary, a very fast transition on the secondary. I'll squeeze in a small amount of time and it shoots right up, indicating that my inductor current, when reflected through to the secondary, gets bigger and can blast me through the ZVS transition much faster. So if the current on the secondary, after I go through the transformer, is higher, the voltage is lower, my power balance. So I've got high input voltage with small current, low output voltage with high current. That high current allows me to charge and discharge these capacitors very quickly. Okay. This was a high step up converter, I'd expect the opposite behavior. I'd expect this interval to be pretty short, and then subinterval three to be much longer, slower resonance. Okay, so after I complete the secondary switching in subinterval four is my main power delivery. Where my inductor current stays locked at peak value. Input and output voltages are positive, and I'm just transferring power from the input to the output. In this case, since both voltages are locked, this is again going to be a non-resonant interval. I have VG on the primary, now positive V out on the secondary. Those are my four intervals per half period. If I went to the next half period, I would go through four very similar intervals, though with the polarities of the voltages switched. Okay. Now my primary switching subinterval five, the out would be in the other polarity. They'd both be swapped for the next phase shift. Swap the input for the secondary switching, and power delivery with both voltages negative. The same, just change in signs. Okay. So I am going to sketch a state plane here. There's a couple things I can notice. First, I've got two resonant intervals and two non-resonant intervals. I'm resonant here, non-resonant here. Resonant in interval three, non-resonant in interval four. So I expect intervals two and four to just be straight lines on my state plane, intervals one and three to be arcs. But my resonant circuit is different in intervals one and three. Here I'm resonating between my series inductance and primary side capacitance. Here I'm resonating between my series inductance through the transformer to my secondary side capacitance. So unless this happens to be, you know, even if this happens to be the exact same value, I'm going to have different waveforms that I'm considering and different characteristic impedances, different normalizations for both of these intervals. Okay. State plane will fall apart if I try to sketch one state plane and change the normalization between different intervals. Not going to get anything useful out of that. So what I'm going to have is two separate state planes. I'm going to have a state plane for VP versus IL, and a state plane for VS versus IL, or I can reflect over and look at the current here. Okay. But this first resonant interval is going to be VP and IL. I'm going to normalize with an R naught is root LL over CP. The second one, I'm going to call this R naught prime. I'm going to carry that notation forward. Anything with a prime is going to be normalized according to these two elements. And that'll look like root NT squared LL over CS. Or I can reflect the inductor over the secondary and consider my resonant circuit over here on the secondary. Make sense? Okay. Go to the next slide, and we will sketch then our two state planes, which is going to be JL versus MP, series inductor current and primary side voltage. Here I'm going to normalize with the base is equal to VG. And I base is equal to VG over root LL over CP. And then I'm going to have a secondary state plane where I'm going to normalize JS prime. It's going to be normalized with respect to R naught of the secondary resonance, and MS, I mean the secondary side voltage. For this one, I'll use, what I did here was use V base is equal to NT VG, which should be V out. Or how I've designed this, the conversion ratio equal to the transformer turns ratio. And I base is equal to V out over root and T squared LL over CS. All right. I'll do one at a time. I'll start with the primary side. I know that the voltage is going to go between minus 1 and 1, normalizing by VG. My VP primary side voltage goes from minus VG to plus VG. So I'm going to go through these four subintervals. I'll start at this point right here. Beginning of subinterval 1, my primary side voltage is minus VG, normalized to minus 1. And then my inductor current is minus I peak, so I'll normalize to J peak, minus J peak. So my initial point, the sketch somewhere down here. Let's say this is minus J peak and minus 1. And what's going to happen from here? Well, my subinterval 1, my kind of initial circuit here, is my resonant interval, where LL is resonating with CP, biased by this minus V out. It's going to reflect through the transformer, come V out over N, which is minus VG. Minus V out over N is minus VG. I have effectively minus VG clamped voltage right here. It means my DC bias for the circuit is going to be zero current and minus VG on the capacitor, which is where it started. It means my DC operating point is going to be right here. So my radius resonance is going to be this. Between my DC operating point and my initial condition. And I'm going to resonate, in this case, to the right. Do that by looking at initial conditions on the first derivatives, or since I have the waveforms here, I can just say, okay, the inductor current is increasing, the voltage is increasing. That means I'm going to go to the right and kind of up. Oh. Didn't quite sketch this long enough, so I'm going to have to distort things a little bit, but I've drawn it. Should resonate like this, in this direction, where this radius stays constant. Not expertly drawn, but I think you get the idea. And I'm going to label this angle here as alpha, which is the angle associated with normalized T1. Right. So interval will end when I reach 1, or saying my primary side voltage reaches VG. At that point, either I turn on devices Q1 and Q4, or even if I don't, their body diodes will turn on, begin conducting, clamp the voltage to VG on the primary. Okay, based on how I've labeled it, that interval ends, I call that minus I1. The current at the end of that resonant interval. I'll label this over here as minus J1. Okay, and that's the only interesting one on the state plane. From there, I'm going to go through a linear subinterval where the voltage doesn't change at all. MP is locked to 1, VP is locked to VG. The current ramps from minus J1 up to J2. That's just going to look like a vertical increase in current here. From minus J1 up to J2. Put the label here. This arc is subinterval 1, this is subinterval 2. Subinterval 3, my secondary switching, I go through a resonance between the inductor current and the secondary side voltage, but the primary side voltage doesn't change. Still stays locked at VG. The inductor current might be hard to see here. Ooh, can I do this? No. Maybe with this? So there is a little bit of increase in the inductor current. I'm gonna see if I can get out of Zoom mode, actually. I may not be able to. It was a little too ambitious, sorry. So the inductor current is still gonna increase a little bit from J2 up to J peak, but the voltage is gonna stay locked. So it's still gonna just look like a little bit more vertical increase up to J peak. And that's subinterval 3. And then my last subinterval 4, I see no change in either the inductor current or the primary side voltage. Inductor current just stays at J peak. Primary side voltage just stays at VG. So on my state plane, that's really this single point. Just sit there for as long as the length of T4. And then at the end of that, I'll start the second half period. Like I said, it's symmetric, so we don't need to really put any analysis into it, but it's going to look the same, just reflected across the origin here. Come over down. Maybe draw that a little better. I would still have, this is again R1 alpha, whole thing symmetric. Okay. Good so far. Okay, so now let's do secondary state plane. Normalizing with respect to V out, secondary side voltage goes between plus and minus V out. Again, I'm gonna put a 1 and a minus 1 and know that my state plane is gonna be contained within those. I try to go outside of those, some body diodes will conduct. Let's look at where we are initially. I'm again gonna start at minus 1 on my normalized voltage, minus J peak prime, it's gonna be same current I peak, but I'm now normalizing with respect to my R naught prime. So my initial point is gonna be somewhere down here at minus J peak prime. And the first thing that happens is primary side resonant interval, one of the same arguments had before for secondary, nothing happens on the secondary while the primary is switching. Current increases a little bit, but the voltage stays locked. I'm actually going to go through subintervals 1 and 2 before the voltage ever begins to change. During those, my current will ramp up to minus J1 prime, then up more to J2 prime, then I'll begin my resonant interval. St- state plane is going to look like. Small increase to minus J1 prime, and then my ramping up to J2 prime before I begin interval 3. One, two, three will come next. Not on yet. Okay, so interval 3 is my resonant interval on the secondary side. If I reflect through, let's say it's that push the inductor over, push the voltage source through the transformer. This is again going to have a DC solution, which is VG times NT, which is V out on the capacitor and zero current in the inductor. So that's going to normalize to this point here. Positive voltage, zero current for my DC solution, which is the center of the resonance. Then I'll have a radius like this, R2, and swing through a resonance that brings me up here. Call that angle delta. Okay. After that, subinterval 4, same thing. Just going to sit here at this point. No voltages or current changing, just delivering power for the length of T4. And similarly, you can then just complete, knowing that everything's symmetric. The rest of my state plane is going to look something like this. Interestingly, we get a very similar shape for both the primary and secondary state planes. The key difference being, one, the primary is traversed in a counterclockwise direction, whereas the secondary is traversed in a clockwise direction. Why does that matter? Well, when I start to look at ZVS transition on the primary side, in order to ensure that during subinterval 1, I make it all the way up to MP is equal to 1. I need to make sure my current is negative enough so my radius will swing all the way around. Right. Here my voltage starts at the DC operating point and has to move up above it. On the secondary, however, I start below my DC operating point and I'm resonating up to my DC operating point. In any resonance, it's always going to pass through the DC operating point on either inductor current or capacitor voltage, which means that it doesn't really matter anywhere I put J2, even if I put it way down here, I'll arc up, get all the way, and get ZVS. As long as this mode of operation is achieved, ZVS is passive on the secondary side. I think my next slide is to write that out. Nope, I put this in. This is just a slide to show the animation. Okay, so these dots are going to trace the waveforms and the state plane just to show how the two correspond to one another. I'll sketch the output current down here at the bottom, just a rectified version of the inductor current. As I go through primary side, where am I? No, I'm going to start in subinterval 4 here. Nothing happens on the state plane because the values of VP, VS, and IL stay the same. sub interval 5, I go through my primary side resonance, traces out this arc on the primary, but all I see on the secondary is a decrease in current. Phase shift interval, that's primary switching again. Phase shift interval, see this vertical drop, both the primary and secondary. Then I have my secondary switching. My primary only sees a decrease in current. Then go through the other half, which traces out the same thing. Okay. And here, I want to derive my ZVS conditions. Mentioning on the previous slide, I'm going to have one for the primary and one for the secondary. For the primary, I need to make sure R1 is long enough to be able to span the full voltage swing that I want. Based on my normalization, that voltage swing is from -1 to 1 in MP, which is of length 2. So I need R1 to be greater than 2 in order to swing around, make sure I get zero voltage switching. R1 is also equal to minus JP. Yeah.
Is there a region for like MP and MS where I could go to -1 to 1 in magnitude, but the variety is definitely better size or width?
There's two reasons. The unimportant one is because when I drew this, I didn't draw it short enough so that my radius would be different. Okay. But also, it will be the case, and that's kind of drawn to indicate, in my normalization, what am I going to have? I'm traversing a much smaller voltage with a higher current and smaller passive values. So actually, if it does correspond to what I drew here, when I sketched with real values and had everything proportional, I'd see some pretty significant arc on the primary side. On the secondary side, the state plane is going to look real tall and real thin, which is going to make it look almost linear in this resonance because it happens so fast with such high current. So part of the reason here is because my drawing is not great, but this is more intentional that, okay, is -1 and 1, but actually a smaller voltage normalized with a different R naught. The condition on the secondary is such that the currents are large and the voltages are small. It's going to make the state plane look more like this. I'm going to have very little deviation in current and a pretty linear change in voltage, which corresponds to kind of how things are drawn here. Yeah. Dependent on the polarity of the transformer. It is, sure, but I could just flip how I define DS the other direction, right? So if I had an inverting transformer, I'd want to switch the two bridge signals instead of switching this bridge first and you get a circuit here. So I'm going to switch Q5 and Q8 synchronously, and then Q6 and Q7. If I made this an inverting transformer, I just switch the signals to those to invert what I do with the out as well and get back to the same operation. So it's kind of the same thing as saying if I just define VS backwards, just flip my state plane on the horizontal axis. Sure. Any other questions? Okay, so on the primary, what I need is R1, which is of length J peak, to be greater than 2. So that'll be my ZVS condition on the primary. Up here, R1 equal to J peak is greater than 2. And just to look at what that actually tells me, I'm going to go ahead and denormalize that. So J peak is I peak over I base is greater than 2, which is I peak over V base over R naught. And then I will multiply VG over to the right. Then I'm going to bring CP over and square everything. Get rid of the radical. Again, we get a form, similar to what we've done previously, that makes some sense, depending on the primary energy in the inductor. This is the energy that it's going to take me to swing CP through a 2VG voltage swing. It goes from minus VG up to VG. What does that tell me about the design of this thing? Well, in my ideal case, I peak is more or less the output current. I don't want to have my peak stresses a lot higher than, the reflected output current, N times I out. But I peak would be higher at higher power, lower at low power. Right? So as I go towards zero output power, I peak should get really small and I won't be able to satisfy this. So I am going to lose VVS at light load. And I need this thing to be bigger. I peak more or less tells me what power I'm at. I really like a large inductance to make this term big, and I can get to smaller and smaller values of current before I lose VVS. So I'd like large LL for the wide ZVS range. Now, make LL huge. LL goes to infinity faster than I peak goes to zero. Maybe I can go down to epsilon output power before I lose ZVS. This constraint is going to be mitigated by the impact that that has on the waveforms. If I have a very large LL, I need a really long phase shift. I'm going to have high peak current stresses and high conduction losses, which we'll look at in a moment. Here, suffice to say, just this is not the only design constraint on LL. Bigger LL will help me to a degree with wide ZVS range, but designing with a big LL is not a good idea. Okay? That's going to be mitigated somewhat when we look at conduction losses. Okay, on the secondary, what do we need? As I mentioned, as long as I'm in this mode of operation, I'm going to get ZVS on the secondary. Doesn't matter. Kind of J2, no matter where it is, even if it's zero, I'm going to resonate up and get ZVS. J2 is prime is somehow less than zero. I'll have diode conduction. It'll bring me up to zero anyway. So I can achieve ZVS for any operating point. In this mode of operation. And that in this mode of operation is actually going to be somewhat of a significant constraint to write, in that I can achieve ZVS, but I may not want to. Reason why. Say even at the limit, as J2 prime goes down to zero, if I allow myself to achieve ZVS, it means I'm going to resonate up to this kind of a peak current. If that peak current is too high for the output power I want to achieve, then I'm going to have to hard switch, even though I've got the energy available, I could soft switch. Doing so is going to take me to a peak current that's higher than what I want. So I may have to actively hard switch this thing just to keep the peak current lower. Okay. So even in the limit, if I start with J2 is equal to zero, if I allow this to ZVS, it's going to carry me up to here, which means that over here, and with J2 is zero, I'm going to resonate up somewhat and have some current. I'm trying to regulate this thing down to zero output current. That may be too high. I may have to force it to hard switch to keep the current near zero. Okay. So kind of an inverse situation to the primary here. I need to make sure I'm at high enough output power, otherwise I can't ZVS. Here at very low power, I need to not ZVS in order to keep the power low. May still end up hard switching, even though there is no constraint on energy. I don't need any energy in the inductor, I can get ZVS. Okay, doing on time, not much. 4 minutes, we can solve the state plane. Okay. So solve this out, we're gonna have intervals 1, 2, 3, and 4. We're gonna write expressions from either the state plane or normalizing the non-resonant waveforms for each of these intervals. Subinterval 1 is the primary side ZVS interval, which is gonna give me two equations, one on alpha and one relating the radii at the beginning and end of the period. So from the radii, what I'm going to be able to say is J peak, which is R1 right here, is equal to R1 here, which is square root of 2 squared plus J1 squared. Okay. And then alpha, my angle, the same triangle here, right? Alpha is the arctangent of 2 over J1. Or if I so desired, say this is arc sine of 2 over J peak, both equivalent expressions for this triangle where I have J peak radius, J1 this side, 2 this side. I can write it as arctan, arcsine, arc cosine, whatever I want there. Okay. Subinterval 2, my ramping subinterval, my current goes from minus J1 to J2, does so in time T2. So what I'm going to have is 2VG over LL times T2 is equal to I1 plus I2. Normalize that by dividing by I base. We'll get J1 plus J2 is equal to, divide by I base on the left, I'm going to get this term divided by VG times R0, dividing by V base over R0, which is I base. The VG is going to cancel, R0 root L over C divided by L is going to give me a 1 over omega naught, which is going to multiply the T2. What I'm going to get is 2 theta 2. Equal to J1 plus J2. All right, yeah. Subinterval 3, my secondary resonant interval, again, two equations, one from relating the radii and one from the angle. Let's box in my final equations here. Subinterval 3, R2 here and here, J peak prime is root J2 squared plus 4. And then delta is equal to, again, I could write this however I want. I'll just do arctan of 2 over J2 prime. Okay. Subinterval 4 is going to give me nothing. That's a single point on the state plane. All my waveforms just sit there. Nothing's happening in any of my waveforms, so I'm not going to get any equation out of it. The only thing I can say about subinterval 4 is that the duration of it, which we call theta 4, is however much of the switching period is left after I go through alpha, theta 2, and delta. Okay. So this is normal complete period equation that we write. We get nothing from the actual state plane, but I can say that TS over 2 is equal to T1 plus T2 plus T3 plus T4. As I normalize that, I will multiply both sides by omega naught. That'll give me, on the left, T1 becomes my resonant alpha, theta 2, T3 is my resonant delta, and T4, my non-resonant interval is just writing as thetas. And over here, I'm going to have omega naught times TS over 2 is omega naught over 2FS, which becomes pi over capital F, or how we've defined F, normalized frequency FS by F0. The two will cancel because I'm only looking at TS over 2. Okay, then I'm going to get one more equation by averaging the output current, and since I'm out of time, we'll have to pick up there on Monday. After we have that, we'll have the complete solution of the DAB. We'll look a little bit at its behaviors and then wrap up for DAB analysis. Okay. Enjoy the break and long weekend. We'll see you next week.